This is Ken Chumbly from the University of Louisville Archives. It's July the 12th, and I'm talking this afternoon with Mrs. Jacques Wolfe about her life and experiences, early experiences here in the U.S. Mrs. Wolfe, would you begin by just telling us a little about where you were born, when you were born?
I was born in September 13, 1909, in Haguenau, which is in Alsace, at the eastern border of between France and Germany. At the time of my birth, Haguenau was German. And at the age of nine, I became French citizen, as everybody in my family did, because we were, for many generations, Alsatian Jews. When I started school, I was taught in German first, but in 1918, after Alsace returned to France, I spoke French fluently because at home we only spoke French. Mm-hmm. But we had to close our windows during the war of 1914-18. We had to close our windows when we spoke French. We could not speak French in public because it was considered a crime.
What were your parents like?
My father was a merchant. He was dealing in hops. And Alsace is a very rich little country. Everything grows there. Among other things, the hops are grown there, which are used in the manufacture of beer. Mm-hmm. And it's a flavoring agent, I suppose. And so, my father was dealing in hops. He bought the hops from the growers and he processed it and resold it to the breweries.
And your early education, where was that?
I went to only one school from kindergarten through 12th grade. It was a public school, but it was a paying school. We had free education up to the 6th grade, but we also had elementary paying schools, and I started in kindergarten. It was government school, but public school, but it was a tuition paying school, and I was in that one school for 13 years. Mm-hmm. From kindergarten up.
Was that the
Collège de Jeunes Filles de Haguenau?
Okay, and it was in Haguenau. Were there many Jews living around you there?
Yes.
Was it a big Jewish community?
Yeah, Alsace has always been a Jewish center. Mm-hmm. And in the small town where I was born and raised, a town of 16,000 inhabitants, there were 250 Jewish families. Mm-hmm. Many of the older generation, older than I, my parents' generation, left Alsace. In 1870, many of them went either to France or came to the United States because they didn't want to be Prussian soldiers.
That was during the time of Franco-Prussian
War. After 1870, and in many families, just one member of the younger generation stayed with the parents. And like, for instance, my father had five sisters and one brother, and they all lived in Paris. My mother had two brothers, and they came to the United States at a very young age. One brother was 14, one was 17, and they came because an uncle of theirs had already lived, two uncles had lived already in New York at that time, and they afterwards left and went to San Francisco. They have been residents. They were in California, among the early residents.
What do you remember? Do you have any kind of special recollections of your childhood?
Well, I had a happy childhood. We were middle class, but never had to endure any hardships besides what was inflicted from outside forces. Like, for instance, I remember I was not quite 5 years old when World War I was declared. And uh, had everything we needed, but as later on, as the war wore on, food was sometimes hard to get. You had to have, you had rationing. And my father, knowing the farm wasn't not far away, used to hitch his buggy and horse, and we went in the country. We got butter, and we got milk, and we got flour, we got whatever we needed. But some people were not as fortunate.
Did the war touch you directly?
No. Hagno was never touched. People from farther south and southern part of Alsace were shelled at that time. But we did not suffer personally from
did many of the Jews whom you knew, did many of them send boys off to fight?
Well, they had to go in. They were drafted in the German army.
Well, they were drafted. That
was German territory at that time. But for instance, in November 1918, Alsace was liberated. And on the 20th of November 1918, and the following week, my father-in-law put my husband, who was 16 years old at that time, on an American tank to send them across the Vosges Mountains to catch the first train to Paris and send them to his aunt, so he would be able to go to France to finish his schooling in France.
Mm, okay. And then during the 30s, you came here.
I became in 40s. Yeah. So during the 30s, I got married in 1930, and then I lived in Paris with my husband. And
what did you all do in Paris?
My husband was also a merchant in barrels. We were dealing in metal barrels. That we had a plant outside in the suburbs of Paris, right near the Bourget Airport. We lived there until 39.
Was there a large concentration of Jews living
in Paris?
Near you there?
Not near, no, in Paris, no.
But there were a lot of Jews.
But in Paris, Jews were scattered all over. There was a neighborhood still in Paris, which was called the old Jewish neighborhood, but were mostly the Eastern European Jews, the ones who had come, were refugees there from early 1900s and later during the 20s, who came from Eastern Europe, like Polish and Russian Jews, lived in a certain neighborhood near the Bastille. But otherwise, most of the Parisian Jews are from Alsatian descent. There are some French Jews who came from the southern part of France, who came to the southern part of France after the Inquisition, after they left Spain, you see. Mm-hmm. Those are the Sephardic Jews, we were the Ashkenazi Jews. Mm-hmm. But Jewish people are still today scattered all over Paris, to live wherever they want to.
And in
1939, I spent the summer in Strasbourg, because I did not stay in, nobody stays in Paris July and August. It is not hot at all, but you go on a vacation. Everybody goes on vacation. So if I went to visit with my parents and my husband's parents, we all came from Alsace. And my youngest son was born in 38, and in August 38, and I just had come home from the hospital when Mr. Chamberlain went to Munich. Mm-hmm. And French started mobilizing their armies. My husband was still in the reserves, having done his duty as a French soldier, and he was mobilized right away. So with a 3-week-old baby and an 8-year-old boy, I went with my in-laws. We went to a place near Paris which my husband had bought short time before, with, for himself and for his family and for his parents. And we were refugees there. He took, my husband came to take me back to Paris, but was drafted in the meantime. And then his brother, one of his brothers who had not been drafted yet, took us to that country place, which was about 100 miles south of Paris. It was 3 miles away from the closest railroad, in the middle of nowhere. So it would not be a military target. He was always.
Mm. So your husband went into the military then?
Yeah, for 6 weeks.
For 6 weeks?
Because it was the, in 1938 the war, when Chamberlain and went to see Hitler and they gave him the Sudeten, Czechoslovakia. And he gave him that, and he was satisfied for a little while, and there was no war, and the reservists were all sent back home.
Do you recall whether most persons whom you knew thought that that Hitler really wanted only Czechoslovakia, really wanted
only
that?
No, we did not know. We knew darn well he wouldn't be satisfied with that. He would not.
People were alarmed, do you think?
Certainly we were alarmed. They lived like on a volcano. You knew what was going on. That was in 1938. We already, a lot of the Germans had come, those who could come came to France to try to live in France. Those who could go farther went farther, but from them, we knew what had been going on since the early 30s in Germany.
Well, so you'd had word from Germany.
Sure. They were, you know, it is hard to realize, you know, Strasbourg, which is the big city in Alsace, is just as far away from Germany as Louisville is from Jeffersonville. Mm-hmm. So and the Rhine River is not even half as wide as the Ohio River is here. So you know you have them right looking at you. You can look at them face to face just across the river.
And so that was in 1939?
38, then 39. So in 39 we were back in the country place. We lived 38 to 39, went back to Paris, and then we went back to that country place with my in-laws, my husband's aunt, who was 76 years old, two small children. My husband was drafted, and his four brothers were drafted. Mm. And my husband came, we did not know, in 40 when.
This was in 1940.
They were drafted in 39, but then in 19, and we stayed that winter in that country place, and then in 40, when things went bad, and in May 40, I was in Paris on May 2nd, 1940. I had to take care of some business, and that night I heard the sirens. I just didn't pay attention, you know. It was the phony war, like we called it. And when I went down the next morning for breakfast, I saw the papers and I heard that all the airports in eastern France and Belgium had been bombed, and that Hitler had the armies had invaded Belgium that night. Mm. And so I went right.
What was your reaction to that?
We knew that was it. So I went back right quick in the country, and we waited, that was May the 2nd, and as it came closer and closer around June the 8th or something, we decided we had to leave. There was my father-in-law who had a heart condition. There was a 76-year-old there, and my mother-in-law, who had 5 sons in the army. Mm. So, and my two young children, and I had a maid who came with me all along. And we were ready to go for the south. And that night, my son didn't know, came crying, he didn't know what to do with his canaries. He was eight years old. So we said, take them to some neighbor, some people, local people who were not going to go away. Mm-hmm. And on the way he met a caravan of cars came towards him and asked the way. And when he looked up, it was people who lived in the same building we lived in Paris, and they came to look for us to make it. To stop over to go farther south also.
So everyone, I guess.
Half of France was on the road towards the northern part of.
Did they think Hitler would only stop with certain? Why were they going south?
Because
of the canal or toward the channel?
No, to the Mediterranean.
Toward the Mediterranean.
Below the Loire River, they thought he would stop maybe in Paris, or he would be stopped. But then
what was the French army doing?
Well, the French army was not well equipped. Where we were in our place where we stay, where we lived, we had garages, and above the garage we had hayloft, and we had 40 French soldiers stationed, reserves stationed in the haylofts. And they were not armed, they were not, you know, they sat and they waited what was going to happen. The French did not have the tanks. In those days, De Gaulle knew what he was saying. He was preaching long before to build tanks, and the Germans were ready, and they went. Yeah, I don't know if you remember the panzer divisions who spread out and they caught
them. So there was just no way.
There was no way to stop them.
So you all went to the south of France.
Then we stopped for 2 months, and we found a place near Limoges. We had somebody lived in Limoges, a friend of ours, who put us up for a few nights. And then we found in an old chateau near Limoges, we found housing for the seven of us. And through a cousin of my husband who lived in further south, we had always said if we got separated or if we don't know from one another, we will write to him. Mm-hmm. And he will put us in touch again. And through him, we got in touch with my parents, with my sister and her family, and with my husband's brother, and that's how they all found out where we were.
I see. And your husband at this time was still in the French Army.
He was in the French Army.
Where was he with the Army?
Well, he was in Epinal, which was in the eastern part of France, but as a reservist he was not on the front. Mm-hmm. And then when they left Epinal, they got strafed, you know, dive bombers came down, they were lying down in the woods, you know, and he got hurt in his leg for a shrapnel, and a fellow about 3 yards from him was killed.
Oh, really?
And so he went in, they took him to a hospital nearby, and they attended his wounds, and then the next morning the Germans came closer. The armies came closer, the whole hospital staff and everybody who could left, and they left the wounded in the hospital, and he got up and he had nothing but the clothes on what he had on his back, and his pants were torn to pieces, but he went off and he hitchhiked on trucks, peace, and the truck broke down, no lack of gas, walked a few miles and hitchhiked again, and he got out. Like this, he got down to Lyon. Mm-hmm. And when he got to Lyon, the gas reservoirs were all in flames because the French had burned up the gas reserves, so the gasoline reserves, so the Germans wouldn't get them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took him again, dressed, got him new uniforms, and he went up to Vichy, where there were the French army was trying to stop the Italians, and they did stop the Italians there, the Italians were. But then in the meantime the armistice was signed, and then he found out where we were, and he...
What was the armistice signed? Was that in
1940? In 40, yeah, in June, okay. June or July, and on the 12th of June, I think, on the 12th of June, I was in Limoges at the time, they signed an armistice. And
did you think that, were you confident that...
No, No, we knew that wasn't the end of it. The way Hitler was, we knew that was not the end of it. And then right away, we got telegrams from our uncle here from Louisville to...
And that was Mr. Levy?
Levy, yeah. To let him know where we are, and he was trying to get visas for us to come.
Were there many French Jews leaving France?
Everybody who could.
The French government was willing to...
What happened... In our case, we were, by the time we were making applications for our papers, we lived in southern France already. We had gone south for several reasons. First place, my sister had her husband had second cousins living down there, so you wanted to go somewhere where at least you knew somebody, you know.
You were French citizens.
We were always French citizens. And so we went there, and also, we thought if things get bad, the southern climate will be better than to be where it's too cold. So we were there. And to go to make our applications for our visas, our exit visas, we had to go to Montpellier. And at that time, the prefect of Montpellier was a young man who was from our hometown, who was from Hagnell, and he knew us well. He did everything he could to get us out of exit visas.
Were they difficult to get?
Well, it wasn't easy. You see, they didn't want to, but we got them for all of us. But we finally got the exit visas too for my husband's two youngest brothers, who were not 30 years old. One had just gotten out of law school, and the other had graduated from medical school. And so they got their visas, their exit visas, and they got there. We had to go through Spain and Portugal. The French ports were already closed at that time. And so they got all their visas, but the Spanish transit visa was refused to the two younger boys because they were under 30, and they were afraid they would go to England and fight against it.
And how old was your husband at the time?
36.
They weren't concerned about him?
No, well, for all purposes, because he was 36 years old and he had two children that made him 40. Each child counted for 2 years. He was in the reserve.
So he wasn't a threat?
No. And neither were his two brothers. There were five brothers. My husband was the oldest of five. And there was one who was 35, and one was 33.
Mm-hmm. And the medical student, or the graduates of medical law school, weren't
allowed. And the medical student, the one who was a doctor, they went back to Paris. Why, we never understood, but they didn't know what to do. The boys were, they thought they could get lost more in the masses. But anyhow, the doctor was caught, and he was killed in Auschwitz. And the younger one, at that time, when his brother was caught, he went to central France again, and he got himself a job. He was with a magazine, merchant marine magazine, and he worked there all during the war. Boss knew he was Jewish, but nobody else knew he was Jewish, and he lived in a small village, and as soon as he could, he joined the resistance. He got the Legion of Honor for having been an officer. He was an officer in the French army, he was an officer in the resistance.
He's no longer alive?
Yes, he is now with the United Nations, with the French press.
The French press
at the United Nations in New York.
Do you correspond?
Yeah,
has he been to Louisville to see
you? Oh, yeah, he has come here. We have seen him in New York.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, so you all got on a boat and went...
Yeah, we got on a boat in Lisbon. The boat's name was the Excambion. It was Excambion's last trip. And the next trip the Excambion took was as a... army transport and was and was blown up.
You mentioned that the French ports were closed.
Yeah.
Closed by
who? Well,
were they bombed or?
No. You couldn't get out. Yeah, no boats came. No boats came in and out.
So the boat, if there were boats, they were going out.
Yeah. No, none at all. There were no boats. You couldn't get out of there anymore.
Did you all stay for any time in Eidenstein or Portugal?
No, we got our transit visa so late that we were supposed to be 2 days ahead of time in Portugal, and we just barely made it. So we stayed 2 days in Lisbon. We spent 12 hours in Madrid changing trains. We spent 12 hours and that was all. It was quite a trip from Béziers where we were. We had to go to Toulouse, from Toulouse to we went to Pau, and in Pau we stayed overnight. That was at the Spanish border, and then we went from Pau to Carrefour, which is the Spanish custom, right? And then from there to Saragossa, to Madrid, and from Madrid to Lisbon.
And then from Lisbon
we came over to New York in, I think, May 11th.
Were there many Jews with you?
No. There were quite a few women who were repatriated from who were Americans and had gone back, lived in France, and who were on the boat, who came back to the United States. Also on our boat was King Car, what was his name, from Romania, is Mrs. Lupescu. They were on our boat there.
Everyone was running away from the Russians and
Germans.
What did you have any expectations of America?
That is a funny impression. We had many Americans used to come spend vacations in France. Uh-huh. Many relatives or friends of ours, and in those people who traveled in those days were the wealthy people, yeah. And they came all dressed up and dolled up and sitting around, and you know, we thought everybody in the United States was like this.
Oh, is that right?
So when we came, we saw people are all down to earth, and I worked harder in the first 6 weeks in Lewis than I had worked, I think, in my whole life, because I was brought up. We had a maid at home. I had a maid when I got married. I never did much menial work or whatever, even housework or whatever. I took care of my children. I mean, it was a completely different thing.
So you came to America and you arrived at the port
in New York.
And I guess you went through Ellis Island?
No, I don't think we had to. The boat went directly to the harbor. And the representative from the Council of Jewish Women, Mrs. Kate Engel, was her name, she came to meet us because Mrs. Kling from Louisville, who was a good friend of our uncle, had contacted the office in the Council of Jewish Women's office in New York, and that woman came. It was a boat ship, and we landed at 7 in the morning, and she helped us so we wouldn't have to go through so many formalities or stay in line so long.
How long were you in New York City?
Well, we stayed in New York City for about 5 days because our uncle wanted us to, while we were there, showed us New York, and also my mother's aunt was still living at that time, and she lived in New York, and my mother's aunt lived on Park Avenue. We were invited for dinner the first night there, and it was very lavish, but they served water with our meal. My father-in-law nudged me, a dinner like this and water to drink.
That wasn't usually wine, I guess.
Fancy drink for everybody, yeah. Poor people drink wine. With our meal,
yeah.
And here we had such a lavish dinner, and they served water.
Were you surprised by other American customs or ways?
Well, not, no. Nobody walked, they all rode cars. Levi used to walk it. Mm-hmm. And what do we call it? The friendliness of the people of Louisville, that was one thing. I was not, our uncle had rented a furnished house for us for the first 6 months, and we were barely inside the house when a neighbor came with a bunch of flowers and greeted us and told me right away anything
I
wanted to know or I needed. She was willing. She was a very, very lovely person.
Where was the house?
On Derringer Avenue.
Where's that?
Oh, it's near Eastern Parkway.
Where
Uncle lived in the Willow Terrace apartment.
What did he do? What did
you have? He had a wholesale job of business down on Jefferson Street.
So when your children got here, one was 10 and the other 2.5, and the 10-year-old boy went into the public schools.
Yeah. He did not speak any English when we came here, but the neighbor children came over and sat with him and taught him to speak English. So when he started school in September, he was fluent. Mm-hmm. And his teachers at I.M. Bloom School were very, very concerned that he shouldn't have any complexes, that he did not have to stay too long. In the second grade, in less than 2 months, he was in fourth grade with the children of his age
did
group.
Did he like American schools?
Oh yeah, he liked it.
Did he like the kids?
The kids were all wonderful to him. They were very, very nice to him, and so were his teachers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you met here a lot of German Jews, you said.
From
was there much contact between you and them?
Well, I did not have much contact with too many people because I was busy keeping the house and having two children, and really I learned how to keep house for the first time because I had never done much housekeeping. I did not know how to cook. And I had to learn how to cook for 6 people right away, and so I was kept quite busy. I was, I had to, with the neighbors, I had, when I moved from Behringer to Edgeland, I had very, very lovely neighbors,
were you living in a Jewish community, or were you living?
On one side, Mrs. Kelly was an Irish Catholic, and on the other side was a Protestant Lutheran. I think she must be of German descent.
People welcomed.
Very, very, very warmly welcomed.
Did you meet much anti-Semitism?
I never did personally meet any.
Well, there was a German Bund group, Nazi.
No,
that was German American Nazi.
I did not have any contact with German non-Jews at that time. But just recently, I read in the paper an article, and I remember when that thing happened, there was a German, Mr. Bodenschatz,
yes,
who lived in the Dortmund apartment, which was right in back of where we lived on Edgeland Avenue, and I remember people in the neighborhood talking about
it. What were they saying about it?
Well, his brother-in-law was a friend of Goering, I think, or whatever.
Did you ever meet him?
I don't think I saw him, but I knew exactly the apartment where he lived. He lived on the 12th floor in the Dortmund apartment.
They were later, I think.
Yeah, they were arrested.
Wrong in jail.
But I remember distinctly, just when I read it recently, I remembered it, you see. But personally, we did not. Everybody was as nice as they could have been with us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What were Americans saying about Hitler at the time, American Jews?
Well, they all knew that it was very bad. They all knew that it was very bad.
So there wasn't any ignorance?
No, they knew. People knew here what was happening. Everybody knew what was happening, but those who had relatives still over there tried to bring them over. Some of them were you know, it took a lot of money because you had, when you left there, you had to leave everything behind.
And your parents, you say, remained?
My parents remained. They had their stocks and bonds and everything, carried them around in suitcases, put it under the bed. You couldn't leave any money in the bank because you didn't know what would happen tomorrow. So they carried everything and they lived off of that.
And you say your parents lived through the...
Yeah, my father died of old age, in 1946. And then my mother in 47, my mother came to live with me, and she lived here for 20 years with me.
And your sister, other children?
We were just the two of us. My sister stayed over there. My sister died 11 years ago also.
Did she, what did she do during, she was in Paris when?
No, they were all over. My brother-in-law was a traveling salesman in France, and he knew the region of Grenoble. He knew that part of France well, and so that's where they were, in small villages. A lot of Jewish people were refugees in those small villages, because there also the underground was very strong, and they knew those people, the non-Jewish people, would look after them and would help them out.
So the resistance,
and in general, the French people in general were all helpful to the Jewish people. Many more would have perished hadn't it been for the French people, any class of people.
Mm-hmm. Were Protestant and Catholic churches in Europe saying much about the persecution of the Jews in France?
There was a Catholic bishop, and the Bishop of Lyon, he sent a letter around to the whole region, and but he was, I don't know if he was or not, if those who spoke against Hitler were locked up or sent to camps, non-Jewish people as well as Jewish people. There were many non-Jewish people who were killed or silenced one way or another. They could, there was nothing they could do.
In the Jewish community here, did you perceive especially in American Jews, a willingness to go and fight against Hitler, to stop him?
But they tried. There was nothing. They went. My brother-in-law, the one who was not married yet, when we came over in 1941, he enlisted right away in the American army, and mm-hmm. he went back. He had been in the French army, and he went back in the American army from 41.
Where did he go?
He was sent to North Africa. Mm-hmm. He was speaking French and German also. It was helpful.
What did he do in the American army?
He was the military police, I think.
He came back after the war?
He came back, he stayed in North Africa. He was in Dakar, and he was in Casablanca. Mm-hmm. He went fencing. He was on the fencing team of that's Stephen's father.
Albert.
Yeah, that's Stephen's father.
Oh, that's interesting. But he came on the boat with you all?
Yeah, he came over with us, and he stayed in 41, and in 42 he enlisted in, he left in February 42. He enlisted right after Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm. And he's in the pharmaceutical business, isn't he?
No, the same thing. He was in the same business than we were in.
No, I mean now.
He's retired.
He's retired.
He's retired already a few years.
So you got here and you got settled into the American way of things and all, and it was a little uncomfortable and all. At first, I suppose
it was a lot to learn, but he learned.
Was there a cultural shock, quote unquote?
Well, what shocked me when I was told about the friction between Catholics and Protestants. Mm. This is something.
By whom were you? Just in Europe?
No, I heard it here when I came here.
Oh,
when I came here, Pope Dan, there was prejudice, so much prejudice against the Catholic here. Mm-hmm. And I heard, and then I didn't realize how bad it was with the colored people. You know, I was told, oh, you cannot sit next to him on the bus, and that was told to me in 1941. And
how did you feel about that?
I never understood. In France, we were equal citizens.
Were there many blacks living in France?
No, not at all. No, but the ones who came from the colonies. These French had colonies. They were musicians, or they were students, educated people, or then there's people who had lived in the colonies, or military people brought mates back from there. But they were colored people. But that was it. But there was not a. Not what happened here.
You didn't. The French didn't look upon them.
No,
less.
They looked upon them as their equals. If they were students, they were students. If they were, naturally there were not very few. Mainly in Paris, you saw colored people. And then afterwards, when the colonial armies came, like. There was intermarriage, because intermarriage wasn't frowned on like it was here, and so there were some mixed race children, but not very few.
Any other recollections of life here and your first encounter with it?
But no.
You mentioned the food there.
The food water. We had to get. You know, used to bread. French bread. It was better. We liked French bread better than the white bread here. But we were. I had lost 40 pounds before from my regular weight before I came, because we did not have enough to eat. Mm-hmm. So everything tasted good.
Mm-hmm. What did this then? During the war years, you mainly reared your children, kept the house. Were you active in any?
Well, I started in 1946, 47, when my mother came over, so she was taking over some of the household, you know, she was doing the cooking thing. And then I felt being able to speak two languages, I could help out. I said I was spared all this, and so I was spared for something, so I tried to give back to for others what was done for me. And so I started with Mrs. Klinger, by the way, had been a friend of our uncle's many, many years ago. And so she was one of my very good friends here. And so she did not drive a car. When I got a car, I started driving her around, and we worked together and helped to settle.
Were there many immigrants coming, many refugees coming?
Yeah. After the DP camp, we had sometimes two families a month.
After
coming.
The what camps?
After the DP camp, the
displaced persons
camps, opened up, and then Federation here signed. Those people did not have any sponsors, so the Federation was through Hayes in New York, was responsible for so many families a year, and they came in sometimes two a month, and we picked them up at the train stations or at the airport, and we went out and settled them. I took the men to Jewish Vocational Service to try to find them jobs. I took them on job interviews. I had to translate for them.
Were they skilled men?
Some of them were, and some of them were not. We had one man, he came here, he was a baker.
Mm-hmm.
He was a baker. The second day he was here, I took him to Lincoln Bakeries, and he stayed here until about maybe 3 years ago. He had to leave Louisville because of his wife's health. She had arthritis or pulmonary trouble, I don't remember exactly why, but for her, she had been very sick many times, and doctor recommended he should go to live in Arizona. And he was a baker at Lincoln's all the time. He was here from 47 or 48 until a couple of years ago.
Were these mostly Orthodox or Reformed Jews?
All Orthodox.
Orthodox?
Most of them, but they were all Eastern, you know, either Polish or Polish or Polish Jews or Lithuanians, Hungarians, Romanians, people who had been in, people had been in concentration camps. They came, had their some numbers on the tattoo, and we, at that time, Council of Jewish Women started evening classes for those people. And my mother spoke English, but she liked, my mother liked to be out with people, so she went to those English classes. So when somebody new came in, the first few times I took them in another room and I started them, you know, a little bit, started to teach them the elementary words, and then until they could go be with the other group, which was more advanced. And we had so many of them that finally Mrs. Ding went to the Board of Education, and then the Board of Education took over.
And began, I guess,
regular. A regular, like they still have today, Seneca High School, they have classes for English as your second language.
Oh, yeah. Did you enjoy working in
the office? Oh, I did. You cannot do that kind of work if you don't enjoy it, because it is, you give hours and hours and hours. You get acquainted with those people, you share their, you know, their concerns and their happiness and everything else. You see, I've done that until I was confined at home because of my husband's sickness.
Is it right to say that for the most part, Reformed families got out early on in the war?
But that was because they came from Germany. So there were no Reformed Jews in Poland or Russia or Southern European. But the Reformed Jews all came from Germany. We did not even have, we had one Reformed temple in Paris. That's all the Reformed, and I don't think they have any more now, even in France. Reformed Jewry came from Germany, and that's why they came first. And then there were, when we had the Russian families who came about 10 years ago, they had absolutely no, so they knew they were Jewish, but that was about all. They had not been practicing Jews, they couldn't practice Jews. The children did not know anything about Jewishness, nothing at all.
Maybe during the 40s, late 40s, 46, 47, 48, you were working on with others to resettle refugees. How did American non-Jews feel about these immigrants coming in?
As far as I know, we did not have any problems.
Any difficulty finding jobs for them?
Well, if they were qualified, they did. Most Jewish people tried to give them jobs, you know. But the ones which were qualified, well, we had the Russian family came about 10 years ago. The man got a meat, he was a chemist for food products or something. He got a job the second day he was here. He didn't even hardly could speak English. And he got a job, he had his papers, he had the accreditation from schools in Russia. And he got a job right away, and I think at Claire's meat company he worked. When the Cubans came, one of the Cuban men, he got his job at Brown Williamson, and I think he's still there. He was a pharmacist, he was a chemist and pharmacist, so he worked down there.
So, Jews were...
But the Jews, in general, most of them were placed in with Jewish merchants to get them started, and then once they were able to take care of themselves, they are Polish people, they lived in Russia. Well, he was an electrician. Well, he worked at the Jewish hospital for a while, and And now he has his own electronic repair shop.
Who is that?
Mendelsberg, Fred Mendelsberg.
Did they settle in any one certain part of the city, or just
they settled mostly around around the Highlands, because we tried to get them where there were also Jewish people with whom they could communicate. In the early days, we settled them around First Street and around between First and Third Street, because in those days the synagogues were still downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're mostly around in the Highlands.
Have many of them remained? How many do you think came?
I don't know exactly. Well, I think at the Federation they should have records, but I have met, I don't know, I could easily say 100 families.
And most of them have remained?
Many remained, some of them left in the early days. I remember in the early days there were two brothers, single brothers. They met a girl here, one of them met a girl here, got married. And then they went to Detroit, because there were a lot of them in Detroit, a lot of their friends had been in Detroit, so they went up to Detroit, and they're very successful in roofing, I think, in Detroit, and I still hear from them for the holidays, they send messages. Some of them went to California. So, you know, when they found somebody they knew, some of them went back to New York because they had friends or found relatives or something,
mm-hmm.
But we have quite a few here, well integrated here.
About this time, there was a kind of growing Zionist movement. How do you feel about that?
I felt very keenly, but had we had an Israel in the 1930s, 6 million wouldn't have perished, because of those who perished, most of them did not have another place to go to. And I think it is a wonderful thing. Personally, I wouldn't want to go to live there. I'm happy here.
Yeah.
One uprooting is enough in a lifetime,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it said quite a number of American Jews and other Jews opposed.
One of the ones who opposed Israel were the Reform Jews. Some of the Reform Jews, and one of them was Dr. Rauch. But when things became, when Israel started to prove that it could do. Dr. R was a big enough man to stand up on the pulpit and said I was wrong, and he worked to his dying days. He worked for Israel. He went every year over there.
Why did he oppose that?
Well, in those days, I don't know. That was before. In the early days, he opposed it. But he saw he was wrong, and he was, as I say, big enough man to stand up in front of his congregation and said, and did. And helped in any way he could, and every year he went there every year from then on, every year.
Do you think many of the Jews who, when they finally got to the U.S. and got settled, and when Israel was just beginning, do you think many of them then went on to Israel, or?
I don't think that many American Jews went there. No, but I know some of those people who left the camps and went first to Israel and came from Israel here.
Oh.
Some of them came here. There are, you know, you have to be an idealist, really, to leave the United States and to go over there and live through. You live every day through what we lived for 2 years in France, not knowing what if you wake up tomorrow morning, if the bombs coming or whatever. You have to keep in your mind that Israel is such a small speck on the earth compared to the big Arab empires there, and that small speck is surrounded completely by enemies and the ocean. So it is not a secure place.
Do you see any cohesiveness in the Jewish people? Do you think that Jews today are more united than
they were? It's very possible. It's very possible.
Because of what Jews have gone through?
Yeah. That I believe in.
What kind of work were you involved in after the immigrants or the refugees got settled? And, did you become active in other Jewish
affairs? Yeah, I was active in the sisterhood. In the,
what sisterhood is that?
Others Israel. Okay. I'm still on the board there. I worked for an organization which is now not existing, which was the first women's organization in Louisville, which was called the Ladies Benevolent Society. And I used to go every other week to Fort Knox to play bingo with the soldiers in the hospital. I did that for 8 years. Yeah. And we had a couples club at the temple. We were active in that. We were president of the couples club for a while. And as I told you, I was a co-founder of the French-speaking group here, Amicale Française. I'm a member of the Alliance Française, which is an international French organization.
French Jews in Louisville?
I don't think so, because there are German Jews who speak French.
Yeah.
But not French. No. But right now, I'm involved. I signed up for that whistle program at the Red Cross. It's We Speak Your Language, and I went to a training course to be able to interpret medical terminology in case of strangers coming to Louisville, and I'm on the committee of whistle program. We have at the Red Cross, we have actually a language bank of about 50 different languages and dialects from all over the world, and we are called upon sometimes. When people come here or get sick, or we advertise in the paper and we also in the hotels, and and we are on call whenever we are needed.
Have you worked with any of the recent Russian Jewish?
No, immigrants? I have not.
You mentioned the man 10 years ago, or the
family. The first Russian who came, and they left. They went to, they're in Los Angeles now. But I haven't been active. But what I'm working with right now is the Federation has a committee called the Shalom Committee, and this is for all newcomers to Louisville people. And I'm on that committee, and
so you're still quite involved.
You see, I was out of circulation for while I had to take care of my husband, and so. And now that people knew I was free and able to go, the younger people still remember me and ask me to come and do things. And
you enjoy all this community?
I do. I thrive on it.
Do you?
Yeah. I would like to get up in the morning and know I can get out and do something. I do not play cards, and I don't play golf, but I go swimming.
Are you involved in the Club 60 out of
I was president. I was a volunteer in Club 60 in 1947, and I'm still a volunteer and a member of Club 60.
You're a member.
Yeah. I grew into being a member.
And you told me you're the president, or were the president of B'nai B'rith.
No, I was woman of the year.
Of
B'nai B'rith. That was,
That was in
1962. 62, yeah. I want to show you my medal from the VA.
And so you received it.
When I was in 1962, I was awarded Woman of the Year award by B'nai B'ris, because of the work I had done with different organizations. I was a member of B'nai B'ris, but I was never active in B'nai B'ris. I was not active, but they chose me because they knew some people had seen me at work and was recommended. And then shortly afterwards, I got the medal, Americanism medal from the DARs, because with Mrs. Kling, we used to go to all the hearings. Every 6 months, when new Americans were sworn in, we were there and we handed them out the pamphlet about becoming an American citizen was not only a privilege, but it also had its duties, and we all should be were reminded that we should be as good citizens as we could be, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And so you
got. I was witness for many of the people I had picked up at the airport or railroad station, and had followed through for the 4 or 5 years. So when they were examined for their citizenship papers, I went with them as a witness.
Do you have any last reflections, comments, or anything? We have just a bit more tape here.
Well, I don't know. I just enjoy being here. I enjoy living here, and I think what I saw is the change I have seen in the Jewish community here is that when I came 37 years ago, you knew you were from this temple or from this synagogue, and now it's more, there has been more intermarriage, and people are more, as people, the affluence is about general, you know, it's not anymore confined to the top.
There's more unity, you think?
Yeah, I think so. More